Welcome to the Soul Grit Podcast. I'm Ann Taylor McNeese, and I'm a licensed marriage and family therapist. I also love Jesus, and I'm passionate about all things gospel and therapy. I created Soul Grit to be at the intersection of mental health and Christian faith. Christ followers need a place to ask questions and get answers about mental health. Join me as we dive into real stories and real questions from people who want to honor God with their hearts, souls, and minds. Hi, welcome back to the Soul Grit Podcast. This is Anne. I'm here today with Kate Purvis. Hi, Kate.
Hey, Anne.
Now, let me tell you a little bit about Kate. We just met. We're new friends. We're having a good conversation here before we hit record. And Kate is a mom who lives in Mississippi. And she has a ministry towards people who are experiencing miscarriage. And she's going to tell you a little bit more about that, because she actually started out as a doula, but had her own story of loss. And now she's here to share some of her story so that people who are experiencing this kind of loss can learn how to heal, learn how to turn to God in their feelings, feel all their feelings, and then to learn how to move forward. So before we get going on this conversation, let me just give you the warning that we are talking about pregnancy loss in this episode. And so if that's something that's sensitive for you and you would like to skip this or come back at a later time, here's your chance to do that. So Kate, why don't you tell us a little bit more about your story?
Sure. So I am a mom. I have 5 kids. My youngest is almost 2, and our oldest, we actually brought home from Ukraine a year ago. She's 19. And in the midst of having our kids, we actually have experienced 15 miscarriages. And so our last miscarriage actually happened about 3 weeks ago. Mm-hmm. And so over the course of I got married 6 weeks after I turned 18.
Wow.
And so we actually found out we were pregnant. We got married in August. We found out we were pregnant the following February. Mm-hmm. And we had a beautiful pregnancy, a really incredible birth. And, you know, I was 19. Mm-hmm. You know, you're a first time mom and you're like, yeah, this is interesting. And so when I was 4 months postpartum, we found out we were pregnant again.
Wow.
And I was devastated. I thought I believed that life began at conception, but here I was 4 months postpartum, still in like this not sleeping stupor. Yeah. And surprise, like, you're having another one. We'd already don't know what we're doing.
Right.
And so, and this is funny, I remember calling my grandmother crying, and I was like, what am I gonna do? I don't know how this happened. She said, well, baby, do you sleep with a man? Yeah. Like, oh gosh.
That's how your grandma says it.
So precious. Thank you so much for that encouragement. And so when I was 11 weeks pregnant with it was a little girl, when I was 11 weeks pregnant with her, we lost her. Mm-hmm. And it was a very wham, bam, thank you, ma'am kind of thing with the first doctor, where the doctor said, you know, hey, we have no heartbeat. You know, let's schedule a DNC for in the morning. Mm-hmm. And walked out. And I was in shock. Like, nobody I ever knew, miscarriage was not even on my radar. I was literally holding my infant.
Oh my gosh.
By that time I was 6 months, mm-hmm. or 5 months, you know, postpartum with her. And it was just like a door had been slammed in my face. Mm-hmm. And so I went to a friend's house, like the next day, or maybe it was later that day. And I remember going and sitting on her couch, and she had 3 little ones at the time that were roughly my kid's age. And she was just the most calming presence. And she had, and this is just one of the ways that the Lord has shown up for me, so I'm going to share this. She had on her refrigerator the card of a local OBGYN. Mm. And I sat on her couch holding my baby. Mm. And sobbed. Mm-hmm. Because, like, I just could not comprehend what was happening. and the doctor was so cold. It was just, oh, this happens a lot. You know, it's really not a big deal. Doesn't mean you can't have babies. See you later. We'll see you in the morning. And my first thought was like, okay, we've done one ultrasound. Like, how do you know?
Yeah.
How do you know that you know? And we want to do a surgery to remove it. Mm-hmm. And so I sat on her couch and I was like, I don't know. I don't understand what's even happening. And two, I'm not really convinced. So what if we go in the morning with no more confirmation and we abort a healthy baby? Like, that was my biggest fear. And she had on her refrigerator, just magnets in the fridge, the card of a local OBGYN that she had been looking for a new one. And a friend had given her this card. She hadn't called. She just stuck it up on the fridge. And she said, you know what? I have a friend who really likes this guy. Why don't you call and see if he can fit you in? And so I called this office. It was like 5 minutes before they closed. And I was sobbing.
Yeah.
And I could not keep it together. And I said, I'm so sorry. This is what's happened. You know, they said I'm having a miscarriage, but I have no signs. And they want to do a DNC in the morning. And I'm just looking for someone to give me another opinion.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, hold on just a second. And she went and she called me back and she said, okay, the doctor will see you if you'll be here at 8 o'clock in the morning. He has C-sections all day, but he'll come in early to see you before he goes to the hospital. And so that doctor sat with me for like 3 more weeks doing test after test until I was convinced before he started pushing, like, okay, we're getting to a level where maybe it's not so safe for the baby to still be in there. And so, but he was so kind. His wife had been through it. He was so kind and he was so, it was my first loss. Mm-hmm. And that was such a launching point for me just in, you know, same pregnancy, same loss, but the way that two different people handled it, two different medical professionals, but one who was a very cold, like, sorry, this happened, but you know, you'll get over it kind of thing versus someone who sat with us. He came in before the surgery and prayed with us. You know, like he was there. He called us afterward. Like it was a really big deal to me in seeing, okay. And you know, now it feels kind of prophetic. It's like, this is how some people handle it, but this is how we're going to learn to handle grief for other people. And I'm so grateful for that at this point. But, you know, at this point we've had 4 live births, beautiful, healthy pregnancies and children. Everything went perfect. My last two, I had them at home. But you know, pregnancy loss happens not to 1 in 4 women, but a 1 in 4 pregnancies. And that's clinically confirmed.
Yeah.
So those that are not clinically confirmed, you know, the number is probably higher. But with it being so common, you know, and with me having had as many losses as I've had, you know, we've had 15, and one of those is a set of twins. We've actually lost 16 babies. And so for me, you know, that those losses and the way they were handled, and then a very traumatic birth led me into home birth. Okay. And so when I had my third, it was just a very peaceful, very redemptive birth. Mm-hmm. It was so beautiful, so peaceful. And I said, oh my goodness, I think that more women should know that this is actually a thing. We can enjoy birth. What in the world? And so I started working as a birth doula, and just a couple of months into working as a birth doula, I had a client who had a loss. Mm-hmm. And now when you've had as many as I've had, you unintentionally become what is the worst kind of guru that you can probably think of.
Yeah.
Where people are calling and they're like, you know, okay, I'm experiencing this, or a friend is experiencing this. Like, what do I do now? And so I had kind of just unintentionally coached people through it multiple times. But when I became a birth doula and I saw just the power of a redemptive birth, and then I saw the absence of that peaceful birth for babies who were no longer alive. And I said, okay, we got to change this. Like I don't have a clue how I could make this helpful for everyone, but for the women within my reach, I can make this as it's never going to be a happy experience, but no. I can try to make this as, I don't even know if it is, as little trauma as I can. Mm-hmm. Like, I can try to help ease that burden and ease that pain, and ease that trauma. And that is just, you know, kind of just kind of organically came about. It was never an intention. It was never something where I was like, oh yeah, this is what I want to do. Because who wants to do that?
Well, just to speak to that trauma piece of this, and this is a trauma that many, many women have experienced and that we don't address well in our culture. Mm-hmm. But what we know about trauma is not that something bad happened to you, but it's how you were cared for and how the meaning that you made of that bad thing that happened to you in the immediate after effects. Yes. So for you to come alongside a woman and say, this bad thing is happening, I can't prevent it. I can't change anything about like bringing this baby out alive. You know,
right.
Yeah. But what I can do is come alongside you and provide you with the emotional support, the knowledge, the even like the commiseration, like the companionship of, I know how hard this is and you're going to get through this and God is going to redeem this on the other side.
Yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's something, it's very interesting how individual it is, you know, because again, you know, speaking to what you just said, where it's, you know, the way that it is addressed, the way that it is handled, the way that people either come beside you or they don't, the way that people say, okay, yes, this is happening and I'm sorry, or people say, you know, oh, well, you know, sucks to suck, but like, you'll get over it. Mm-hmm. And that's such a common thing. And for me, being a Christian, it is something that, like, I see two different worlds. Like, I see the culture of the world, and then I see the culture of grief also in the church. And it's very, very interesting to me that there doesn't seem to be a lot of separation there.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that's where I have felt so called to come into that, is that we should come alongside people in their grief differently than people in the world come beside people in their grief. We should be bringing them to the feet of Jesus. Whereas people who are outside of that and don't have people who know Christ, they have nothing. They've got nowhere to take them. They have nothing to offer, but we do.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's very, you can look in the way that Jesus grieved with people as I think the biggest way to see how to address the way that the trauma and the traumatic event is unfolding. You know, if we look at Jesus in, let's look at Jesus with the woman at the well. Okay. She wasn't necessarily grieving. She was living, you know, a life that was probably not her best life.
Yeah.
Right. But what is the first thing that Jesus did? He showed his humanity. Hey, give me some water. He didn't go to her and say, oh gosh, you know what? You're on your fifth husband. That really sucks. That is stinky cheese. He said, hey, you know, like, I need something too. Like, I am, you know, and Jesus, he showed his humanity. He didn't show up with his divinity, you know, and I think a lot of times in the church, we come in with this almost, we come in wanting to be real churchy, you know, but I ask this question a lot, you know, to like church leaders and stuff, is if you're walking out by the ocean, okay, it's a peaceful morning, you're looking out over the ocean, and something, you see something over to the side, and it just kind of breaks your gaze from the sunrise, okay? Mm-hmm. And you look over, and there's a woman, and you see her. She's very silent, but she's bobbing up and down. She's drowning. You know she's drowning. Do you take the steps to go out in the water with her, or do you look at her and you say, I'll pray for you, and hope it saves her? You know, and it sounds, yes, and it sounds so dramatic, but the truth is that if we're not willing to show our humanity and get dirty and get in that with them, then we run the risk of them laying in the muck for their whole lives.
Yeah.
When we, you know, like, you're holding a water hose, wash them off.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think what's really important in what you're saying, we want to point people to Jesus when they're in grief, because Jesus, like you said, shares our humanity, is our comforter. But we don't want to do that by just saying, well, here's a Bible verse. You shouldn't worry. Or we know he's in a better place. Or, you know, we know God has a purpose in all of your trials. Like, those are not actually comforting statements. It's much
not in that moment. They're not, you know, like there's a time and a place for them, but the immediate aftermath is not like we're, the truth is that when we have these losses, you know, and it's really, it's any loss, but this loss in particular, it's such a lonely loss, right? Like, and grief as a whole is a lonely place to be. Okay. But when we're talking about miscarriage, we're talking about pregnancy loss, especially when it's in the earlier stages. A lot of times, I am the only person who ever held my baby.
Knew about your baby.
A lot of times, I am the only, well, I'm not me, but like a lot of women, they are the only ones who even knew that that baby existed.
Yeah.
And so the loneliness of that, when you're going, you're not only telling people I lost something, but you're having to convince them that the thing existed for you to lose.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, hey, I was pregnant and now I'm not.
Mm-hmm.
I was pregnant and my baby died.
Yeah.
To them, your baby never lived.
Yeah.
And as the church, and this is, you know, this is kind of a controversial thing right here that I say a lot is, this has really shown me so much who truly believes that life begins at conception, you know, and we're not going down that road, but there's a lot of gray area there in the church that you don't see or that you don't think of when it comes to pregnancy loss, because I cannot tell you how many times I've had Christians who, and the thing is they're all well-meaning. No one is setting out to intentionally hurt or injure. But in instances of a blighted ovum, you know, a blighted ovum is a pregnancy where the entire pregnancy develops except for the embryo, like the actual body of the baby. But what point did that stop? You know, it, just because it's microscopic doesn't mean that it didn't exist. The fact that sperm and egg met indicates conception. That indicates life. And so what I had, I've had three blighted ovums. And what I experienced in that was, you know, oh, well, at least there was no baby. And my questions there become, you know, one, well, it answers a lot of questions about what we believe about life beginning at conception. But aside from that, if we were to completely sidestep that, this woman, in her heart, grew a baby, you know, and all three of mine, the pregnancy ended around 8 or 9 weeks. I found out I was pregnant at 4 weeks. Do you have any idea how much of their life you plan out in just a few short weeks? And it's not a loss of a blood. So it's never just, oh, it's a blighted ovum. It's fine. You know, like there is, they are grieving the loss of the child that should have been, because no matter when, no matter if the baby's body grew to a point you could see whether it stopped growing, you know, like in a microscopic state, that life still existed. And that life, though it was not real to you, it was extremely real to her.
Yeah, mom.
And so the grief does not change. It's never made anybody feel, well, I can't talk in absolutes. It probably is very uncommon. I can tell you this, it never made me feel better for someone to say, oh, well, at least there was no baby.
A real baby.
Because, you know, when I am going through a very real labor process of losing that, you know, I would differ from you in that opinion.
Yeah.
And so part of what I want to do is just be alongside women in this and teach people how to be alongside women in this, because it's so personal. Each woman is going to grieve differently. Some women don't grieve. One of the things I found that I had to deal with that, and it was very surprising even to me, was that I have a friend who I had been their doula for their first baby, and then they had, you know, gone it alone, had a fantastic second birth. And then they were pregnant again with the third baby, and she had called and said, hey, you know, surprise, we're having another baby. Would you be my doula? And I said, of course I would. And just a few weeks later, she just texted me and she was like, oh, hey, you know what? Never mind. Don't need a doula. And, you know, of course, red flags, like, woo, woo. And I was like, what, you know, like, what's going on? Everything okay? And she was like, you know, yeah, well, we had a miscarriage. And I was like, okay, like, let's go a little bit deeper here. And she was fine. You know, she was like, you know, we really weren't ready for another baby. It wasn't a good time. And so we're really not devastated. And I had to fight the anger. You know, I mean, I felt like I had been stabbed in the eye. And it's so.
You were grieving for her, right?
Yes. Yes. Oh, you know, and it was so, it was very surprising to me the way that that. And I don't enjoy the word triggered, but the way that it triggered me, you know, it was like a, she's fine. What's wrong with me? Like, why am I not fine? Because I was so angry. And so, but that showed to me, you know, that showed to me one, that it's very different in the way that we approach the grief has to be individualized to the woman. Right. But also, you know, it showed me some stuff in myself where I was like, okay, that's not healed. Like, that's not, you know, like, you're going to have to rein that in before you want to stab somebody in the
eye. Yeah. Well, it makes me think, like, just in general, grief is not just this one thing. Like, grief is not just somebody died and now I feel sad. You know, grief can be the loss of a dream, the loss of a relationship, the loss of, I thought my life was going to be this way and now it's not that way.
Yes.
Or the opportunity to pursue a career that you thought you wanted, or the opportunity to, for like a health problem can cause grief in your body.
Yes.
Any of those. So it's not just like it was a real baby and the real baby died. And so then obviously you're going to grieve, but it is like that loss of the dream of the person that you were imagining in your heart.
Yes.
Found out when that pregnancy test had the two lines, you know.
Yes. And that is something that is so, that's something that's so important for me to, you know, like to speak about, to speak on, is because we will never understand everyone's grief, right? There are people, and I'm so, I could not tell you how thankful I am that there are women who will never, so many women who will never experience what I've women there or what I've experienced. There's so many women who they get pregnant and they are excited and then they have a baby and that is it. Like, that's just, that is their story. You know? And well, I would love for that to be mine.
Like, my story is different from yours in that I haven't had any miscarriages. I had three healthy births, and
that's wonderful.
But what's different about my story is that when I was 19, I was diagnosed with PCOS. And at that time, they told me that it's very unlikely that you will be able to get pregnant. And if you do, it's very likely that you will have a miscarriage. And so at 19, thinking like, I wasn't married yet, I wasn't wanting to have kids yet, I wanted to finish up schooling and all of that. But I grieved at that point the loss of future children that I knew I wanted.
Yes.
And at that time, my sister was, she was 17. She's 2 years younger than me. And she sent me a care package and said, I'll have babies for you. And what turned out to happen is that she had the most awful pregnancies in the world, throwing up 16
bless her.
A day and, you know, having other complications. And then God just gifted me these three great healthy pregnancies that were no big deal.
Yes.
And so you don't, like, you just don't know. Like, I anticipated grief. And I grieved, like, at that, like, early adulthood for what I thought was the loss of a dream. And God turned the story around. You just, like, you don't know.
Yes. And it's so, you'll find a lot of women who have a hard time getting over the envy of that, you know, like the envy of other women getting, and you know, it was taken from me very, very early. But, and something you said really made me think, where you talked about, you know, grieving the future and the children that you should have had. And that's so, that it just kind of brought this out, and I'm going to work on saying this without crying, because I think that it needs to be said. 3 weeks ago, well, you know, because we were supposed to be recording, 3 weeks ago, we had our 15th miscarriage. It was a very, long and crazy month and a half. So at first, you know, we were told, you have a very unpregnant uterus. Everything looks perfectly not pregnant. And then we were, but my levels, my HCG levels were rising. And so then we were told, okay, like, we're coming up on 8 weeks now. We're dealing with an ectopic pregnancy, and we've got to do something now. Like, we either have to start methotrexate, or, you know, which, just for people who do not know what that is, it's the medicine that empties your body of pregnancy. Or we need to do an exploratory surgery and try and find the baby and then remove the baby. And so, you know, one of the griefs that people deal with in ectopic pregnancy is something that I don't think it's talked about a lot, is that when you are having an ectopic pregnancy, you have a healthy pregnancy growing. It's just growing somewhere that's not in your uterus. And so when you have to make that decision, you have to make the decision to kill the baby to save your life. But if you don't, it'll kill you both. And so, one, that's a really hard place to be. And I found myself, like, just beside myself, like, how do I make this decision? And so we had an appointment, that appointment on Monday. The day before, we decided we were going to go to the emergency room. Just, you know, we couldn't get in with another OB on such short notice. And I really, like, I'm the queen of second opinions when it comes to doctors or anybody. I'm like, we're going to put another set of eyes on this. You know, like, I just feel like you can never have too many people looking at it. And so I was wrong, by the way. We went to the emergency room, and we were told by that doctor, we have a very healthy pregnancy in your uterus. We have a fetal pulse. We have everything. We just don't have a heartbeat. And, you know, it's still early enough that maybe we won't. Or, like, maybe it's just early that we don't have it right now. And so we rejoiced. We were like, oh my gosh, like, this is amazing. And so a week later, we had our regular doctor's appointment. I went to a different OB that I had used before. And when we got in there, they were like, you know, this is a blighted ovum. This is not going to grow. Like, this, you're going to miscarry. And all of this to say, this last miscarriage has been an experience that I haven't been before. Whereas in all of our losses before, there was always, like, I've had healthy pregnancies. There's always this hope in me. We're like, okay, we can have more, right? And I'm the crazy person that at five kids, I'm like, you know, let's learn more, you know, sure. Like, I'm drowning, but I can hold a baby. And so, the difference here, which, you know, at this point I can say, I don't think I'll ever be like, yeah, if I had to do all of this again, I'd do it all again. But this was an experience that now I am able to empathize in a different way. Whereas now, you know, my husband and I have had the conversation of, like, I can't do this anymore. Like, I wanted another baby, but I can't do this anymore. Like, I can't continue to do this emotionally, like, physically. Holy moly, my body is just, it has been through it, you know? So, like, emotionally, physically, our kids, you know, it's like, I can't do this anymore. And so right now, for me, it's not just grieving the loss of the baby, but grieving the loss of, like, the future that I thought that we had. And I think that, you know, I'm so glad that you brought that up, because I think it's a really important place for women, because every woman's going to be there different. Not every woman's going to go 15 pregnancy losses before they call it quit. I know women who've had two or three and they were like, no more. We're not doing
it.
You know? And I never could understand that. Like, I was like, you know, like, but you could, like, you could have another, like, you could have a baby. And so here we are, where we're in a place, a different place of empathy. It's like, okay, I see it now. Like, I see this grief over the babies that I wanted. That may, you know, like, I never wanted kids growing up. I didn't want kids. I didn't think I would get married. And then bam, I was the first one of anybody we knew who got married. And, you know, it just kind of took me by, well, I mean, at 18, it took everybody by surprise. Yeah. But, you know, like, I didn't dream of my wedding. I didn't dream, like, my whole life of having kids. And then, you know, I got married and I was like, this man, I will make 7 million of you. Like, just like, you know, I will have so many of your babies. And so getting to the point now where it's like, I understand now how she felt, how those women felt when they weren't just grieving the loss of the baby, they're grieving the loss of a future. And now having to reframe their mind to say, okay, now where's the hope? Like, the hope in the one future, like, I saw it.
Yeah.
But now that I don't feel that hope anymore, like, you know, you're kind of walking into the darkness there and saying, okay, Lord, like, I am trusting you to light this up. Like, I'm trusting you to show me, like, if that's not the path that we're walking, show me the path you want me to walk.
Right.
You know, and for me, that has been this with the Christian Miscarriage Company.
Yeah. Well, this is first mention that you've had of it. So let's talk about the Christian Miscarriage Company and what you're doing to try to bring some hope and peace to other women.
Okay. So the Christian Miscarriage Company clearly has been born out of my grief and out of my experiences of, you know, the support and lack of support in the church more specifically.
Yeah.
So what my goals are with the Christian Miscarriage Company are kind of twofold. One is to really come alongside women who are experiencing miscarriage and pregnancy loss and say, okay, like, here is a place where you can go when you feel like no one else understands. I do. I've been here. I've been here so many different times and in so many different mental spaces, yeah, like
circumstances.
I've been there. And, you know, so the big thing for those women, that we're doing with launching the Christian Miscarriage Company is one, you know, being a place everybody in this day and age when we need to zone out, what do we do? We take out our phones. So, you know, being on Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, those kind of things with just, you know, 5 seconds of encouragement makes a lot of difference. It really does. And, you know, you can go a lot of places and learn about miscarriage, but there are not a lot of places you can go and learn about miscarriage in light of what the Word says about who you are in Christ.
Yeah.
And that's a really big deal for me. Because had it not been for my husband and my husband's faith through all of this, I genuinely don't know what I would be doing right now. And so many women don't have that. And so, one of the things, one of the other things, or the only other thing with the Christian Miscarriage Company. So we have that aspect of really coming in and encouraging women. But then in August, I'm actually launching a church course, a training for churches on how to come alongside women in grief who are experiencing miscarriage. You know, I could broaden it and go just grief in general, but I think, you know, the big deal for me is in the church, grief is, well, in the world in general, but especially in the church, grief is uncomfortable, right? We slap a smile on Sunday morning. We scream at our spouses and our kids all the way to the car. And then we're like, all right, straighten up your tie and pull your pants up because we're going in happy, you know? And so we have this like facade of happiness going into the church. And because of that, no one knows how to get in the uncomfortable. Nobody knows how to deal with grief. So this training course that we're launching in August is actually going to be something that comes in and says, okay, here's how to get down in the dirty. Here's how to create a ministry team in your church whose job, like there, when someone gets that text, you know, hey, Susie lost the baby, or hey, pray for me for losing the baby, that they know, okay, here's what we're going to do. Here's how we're going to come alongside and support this family not from a standpoint of counseling, but from a standpoint of biblical hospitality. And so with that, you know, I am not a counselor. I would probably make a terrible counselor, but you know what I'm really good at? I'm really good at feeding people.
Yeah.
And I'm really good at getting down where people are, because I have experienced, you know, grief and loss in so many different areas of my life. But this one, it's so important to train churches on the nuances of pregnancy loss and miscarriage, right? So that they can say, okay, you know, she's hurting and she's grieving. Let's send her a Bible verse. No, no, no. Hold on a second. You know, and feeding people is great, but that is one of the ways that we're going to come along this family and support them. So we're kind of twofold in that, with supporting the women. I just published a book.
Yeah.
So it'll be available on Amazon June 1st in paperback. It's actually available for pre-order now on ebooks. But this book for me was something that ran the gamut of both of those sides. So the book is called The Words I Could Not Say, Musings of a Miscarriage Mama. And this book is actually just a collection of things that I wrote, like poems, journal entries, thoughts that I had over the course of having all of these losses. Yeah. And so with that, it serves two purposes. One, when women read this who have experienced loss, but they didn't have a way to frame it. They didn't, you know, they have these thoughts and these feelings and they seem so ridiculous and they're so overwhelming and nobody else seems to have a clue what we feel or what we need. When they read that, my hope is that they will read it and say, yes, I've been there. Yes, I felt that. And oh my goodness, I had no idea how to put it in words, but here it is. Yeah. And there's something, actually ended up publishing it because I read something on the internet about miscarriage. And you know what it was? It was by a girl called, let's see, her Instagram is The Miscarriage Doula. Okay. And it was just a little blurb, and it said, recurrent pregnancy loss made me feel like the girl who cried pregnancy. And that resonated so much with me. It was like, okay, I've always felt that way, but I had no way of putting it into words. Like, I knew that I felt that way, but I didn't know that was what it was. So putting a label on that was like, it felt like a weight had been lifted off my shoulders and I was just scrolling TikTok on the couch, you know? And so, but anyway, for my book, The Words I Could Not Say, that's my goal in that with those women. Is that they would see that and they would say, you know, okay, thank you, Lord, for putting something into my hands where I know that someone understands me.
Yeah.
You know, feeling seen. But then on the other side, you know, support people, churches, people who, you know, don't know that at some point miscarriage will touch everyone's lives. If, you know, your friend, your sister, your somebody. And for people who are reading it that are never going to experience that, for them to see it and say, oh my gosh, I had no idea that you felt that way. But now that I understand a little bit about what's behind that curtain, let's pull that curtain to the side. Like, let me in.
Yeah.
Because now I have a better idea. And that is really kind of my main goal with that. But with the Christian Miscarriage Company as a whole, is that, you know, to reach as many people as I can who have experienced pregnancy loss, and then teaching the church how to come alongside them and say, I got you. Like, we're in this together, but you're not going to drown. And that's the whole of it.
Right. So what's available right now is, you know, like your social media presence.
Yes.
Getting those small bites of encouragement. And then what's coming next?
Yes. So I am on Instagram and TikTok and Facebook, the Christian Miscarriage Company. So next, let's see, June 1st is actually the availability of the paperback for The Words I Could Not Say. It's available now on Amazon pre-order. Next, actually, in I don't even know what today is. In the next couple of weeks, May 1st, I think.
Yeah.
I don't know. May 1st, I should have the final approval on a miscarriage devotional journal that'll be releasing July 1st.
Okay.
So we'll have June 1st is going to be the words I could not say. July 1st will be a miscarriage devotional journal. So the goal in that is just really leading women to the feet of Jesus and saying, okay, like here's something that you can go through every day. That's just a little bit. It is not a Bible study. It is truly a devotional journal. So we talk, we go in and say, okay, here is our verse for the day. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about this a little bit. Let's talk about how this applies to our lives. Let's talk about where we are in the muck right now. And let's find the light in this. And then here's a journal prompt. I want you to take what we learned and take this journal prompt. And we're going to write out how this applies to our lives. We're going to see it in the word. Mm-hmm. We're going to learn about it in the passages. You know, there's so much of me poured into those passages. Just, you know, that camaraderie, that, you know, like I've been there, girlfriend kind of thing in the passages. So we start with the Lord. And then we bring that in with, okay, I've been there. And here's what the Lord showed me in my grief. And then here's what we're going to do to make sure that we know how this is applying in our lives today and write that out.
Okay. And then the course for churches is August. So you got June, 1st. July, August. Do you have a name for the course yet?
No. So if anybody has some suggestions.
Okay. Okay. I'll be thinking about that.
And that's the like, only thing I don't know.
Where I'm assuming people could follow you on social media if they want to be like alerted when that's available, right?
Yes. So actually we are finishing up the website. We're I'm so grateful to be doing this with you right now because we really are in the initial launch phases of this. So June 1st, maybe before, but my official date, wink wink, okay, is June 1st for our website to be finally up and live. You know, we're waiting on, I have to have the links to the things that I need for the website and stuff. So that'll be available as soon as the website's available, we'll have the availability to sign up for email alert and such, but there's going to be a lot, all of the updating will be done on social media as well.
Okay. Well, I'm going to link all of the, what is available now in the show notes so people can start following along and then they can be alerted when new stuff comes out and they can see what you're doing. And especially I think if they have somebody in their life that, you know, maybe has gone through this, will go through this, it's just a good thing to have like in your back pocket to know that there's encouragement out there when you're going through this very private kind of loss.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. So let me ask you my question that I ask all the guests. What are you doing for soul care?
Oh, goodness. That's a good question. I think the biggest thing for soul care is really, and it, you know, it's so cliche, spending a lot of time in the word. Mm-hmm. And now a lot of time, it looks a lot different than a lot of time for people who don't have five kids. You know, so for me, you know, like in the mornings while I'm drinking my coffee, there's always a baby in my lap. So, mm-hmm. You know, we're reading and I've really been right now in where I am and being so fresh off of these, I've really been diving in where Jesus grieves people or where Jesus meets people in their grief, you know, so in grief, in loss, you know, just the restoration there. And, you know, I've been spending a lot of time in John chapter 4 with the mm-hmm. Samaritan woman at the well. I've been spending a lot of time where he's healing the blind man. You know, things like that are so, they're so refreshing to me,
mm-hmm.
you know, but another thing that is soul care that I've been working really, really hard on is just doing nothing.
That's hard.
You know, like as I'm an overachiever and I feel like I need to always be doing something to be productive.
Mm-hmm.
And so something the Lord's really been working with me on is like, okay, in order to be productive, you actually have to stop.
Yep.
Like in order to have the energy to keep going, mm-hmm. you have to stop. You can't, you cannot operate in this mental space in the same capacity you always have been. So mm-hmm. stop. slow down, let me fill your cup, and then you can go from there. So those are really the big things in hot baths. I'm a hot bath queen.
Right. With no little people like knocking on the door.
Listen, there are two doors that lock between me and them.
Okay, got it.
And the others are old enough. I'm like, y'all throw crackers on the ground. I don't even care. Like, you guys, you're going to be fine. Yeah. I'll be back in 45 minutes.
Yeah, there you go. Well, good for you. Well, as I said, I'll have all of the links for everybody in the show notes. They can follow along with everything that you're creating and the ways that you're bringing hope to people. And I just want to thank you so much for being vulnerable with your story to share with me and our listeners and the people who will read the book and all of that. And I'm just, you know, grateful to God that He's working through your life.
Thank you so much for having me. I've so enjoyed it.
The Soul Grit Podcast is a production of Soul Grit Resources. You can find more at soulgritresources.com or on the socials at Soul Grit Resources. You can email me at info@soulgritresources.com.